Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. Again, my name is Jeffrey Davis, and we're in the Money Matters Radio Network studios. I always enjoy it when Greg Stoller decides to stop by and be my guest host. He always brings interesting points of conversation. Greg, what's up today?
Thank you, Jeffrey. Good evening to you.
Good evening to you.
Here in the dog days of summer on Radio Entrepreneurs.
It's August.
You got it. A lot of people are preparing for September. I'm pleased to introduce our next guest. He is going to be referring to a country which has gone through a major sea change from the period 1947 to 1990. I'm referring to the License Raj or Permat Raj section of India. Sameer Jaloria knows a little bit about the country. He's only been there, Jeffrey, 15 times over the years, and himself is of Indian descent. He is a freelance writer, a consultant, and Sameer, welcome to Radio Entrepreneurs.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be here again.
So 15 times going to India, business, pleasure, a little combination of the two?
Yes, a combination of the two. I throughout my various visits, from the first time when I was 2 years old to my most recent trip this spring, I've seen a huge change in the country. As you had alluded to earlier, pre-1991, India was pretty much a socialist country where the government ran most of it, and I saw the significantly lower standards of living than I saw the last couple of times I've gone, where there's a lot more money, there's a lot more foreign direct investment, and a lot more diversified economy, as well as a huge middle class which has fueled consumption, and as a result of that, I've seen increases in life expectancy and literacy rates and the availability of food. So definitely significant progress has been made since 1991.
And a lot of what Sameer is saying, Jeffrey, has been well documented in a book by Edward Luce called In Spite of the Gods, The Rise of the Modern India. I've read it for preparation for my trips over there. It parallels a lot of what Sameer is saying, etc. So Sameer, let me ask you a question. Assuming that cost was not an object and you had $100,000 of open investment, would you invest today in a mutual fund that specialized in India or in an Indian company itself being publicly traded?
That's a good question. I don't know if I would feel very comfortable today. And there are a couple of reasons. And this is a little different from if you'd asked me this question 3 to 4 years ago. The reason is because I'm somewhat cautiously optimistic, if I can use that phrase, for India over the next 4 to 5 years. And let me just break it down into a couple of reasons. So, India had significant growth back in the mid-2000s. In fact, it hit, 9.5% in 2005 or 2006. But growth has slowed to 4 to 5% in the last year or two. And while that's much higher than the U.S., it's stagnant. And I'm concerned about India for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, there is so much corruption out there. There are all these scandals, where the government's been cheated of significant revenues. And secondly, another big problem, something I've seen in every single visit out there, is problems with the infrastructure out there. It's almost as if they put the cart in front of the before the horse in terms of, they've got some education, they've got a lot of educated people, they've got businesses, but they don't have the infrastructure to allow for sustained growth. But a big, big problem is they have these arcane laws, especially with respect to respecting intellectual property and having these arcane tax regulations.
But Sameer, wouldn't you agree that every single country, not everyone, but the majority of them are going through it? Think about what's happening in China. The new premier, Xi Jinping, has as one of his 4 or 5 main objectives to root out corruption. It was only recently in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that they got rid of the blue laws prohibiting certain establishments from opening on Sunday. I'm the first to admit that India has a different set of corruption problems, a different set of cultural issues, but how much of that is just a country coming of age versus a systemic failure, as you put it?
Why is it just a country coming of age? Why aren't some of the of-age countries corrupt? I mean, it happens throughout Europe. I was in Quebec last week. They put the mayor of Montreal in prison, and they expect to put the rest of City Hall in prison.
That's exactly my point.
So those are all very good points. The thing is that the difference between India and other countries is that India leadership has failed its people. The current Prime Minister, Manmohan Singh, who ironically was largely responsible for the easing of trade liberalization in the economy back in 1991, has been the Prime Minister since 2004, and he's failed the people. And he has been a very, very poor leader. And so under his reign, corruption has blossomed. And a lot of necessary reforms that are needed to kind of, you know, sustain the country's growth over the next 10 to 15 years have just not happened. And so, you know, yes, you know, India was growing because, you know, it was exporting a lot of, you know, IT services were being provided. But, you know, there have been some changes. A lot of companies are now relying upon the Philippines, for example, for back office IT support as opposed to India. And a lot of it has to do with their failure to improve a lot of the regulations. So, yes, other countries have problems, but I think it goes back to leadership. And India's leadership has been lackluster.
You're listening to Radio Entrepreneurs. In the studio this evening, we have freelance writer Sameer Jaloria, referring to the country that has best been described as operating by three vital key cultural concepts: Hinduism, fatalism, and collectivism. We are talking about India, and they have, by the way, just for the benefit of our listeners, six official languages in Hindi, Urdu, Tamil, Bengali, Kashmiri, and English.
I have one of those languages down to a working level.
Really? Which of the six besides English?
That's it. English.
You could do great. So, Sameer, everybody, when you talk about India, says that people are on Indian standard time, that they sort of run at their own pace. The bakshish or the tip is just part of the way of doing business. Have you seen any palpable change over the 15 times that you've been there since birth up until now?
So, to be honest, a lot of that is still there, especially the Indian Standard Time. And a lot of it, unfortunately, goes back to the fact that the government ran everything, you know, for so long. And as you and I know, as when the government is so kind of intertwined with the economy, there isn't that level of accountability. And so people are just kind of doing things in their own pace. So a lot of that has, you know, kind of morphed into or permeated into the private sector. It's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still very, very prevalent, and it takes forever to get, you know, paperwork done or, you know, to open up a bank account. It's better, but it still has a long ways to go.
It's interesting. It's interesting that you're looking at BPO or business process outsourcing as being somewhat of a pejorative. I mean, let's face it, agriculture provides employment to nearly 75% of India's population, and the service sector has considered to be a major employment engine for much of the country. But yet you're still not necessarily convinced that they're doing it the right way.
No, and I think because, one, these were all great solutions, I think it's just not gone enough. And I think, you know, for example, a country in this day and age should not have 75% of its, you know, people working in kind of the agricultural sector. I mean, you look at the U.S., you look at the West, it's much lower. It's in the single digits, if my memory serves me correctly. And secondly, you know, in terms of, again, looking at the long term, the country is not invested in, you know, adequate healthcare, adequate education. And so unless, you know, India's leadership invests in those, it will not be able to have sustained long-term growth.
Which is interesting, Jeffrey, because admission to the India Institute of Technology is considered to be on par to Harvard, Yale, or Stanford in this country.
You know, it's hard for me to understand. Again, it's an arm-length evaluation. And but India has, you know, over a billion people, if I'm correct, and there are over 200 million people who are middle class and above, which is more than the United States has. And the impression I always had was that it's the system really is, by design, is makes it very difficult to sort of solve the problems of a billion people. So there are some there are some benefits to the system. I mean, it must be hard to support 200 million middle class. That's more than, you know, than the United States has. So that's a fairly, that's one of the largest middle class populations of the world. But yes, there's a lot of neglect to the system as well. Can it be fixed by anyone? That would be my question.
That's a good question. I think there's definitely potential to. I think it's just going to take a lot longer than it did in other countries. And I think part of it is going back to the you know, the leadership. I mean, comparing it to, say, China, if my memory serves me correctly, please correct me if I'm incorrect, Greg, but I believe the middle class in China is 300 to 400 million people, and it's growing. And a lot of that is because of the, you know, stronger leadership, because, you know, they had a goal of really growing the middle class. India has
but,
had that.
But a very different type of control of the economy.
I would agree. I've been over there a couple of times. The power, and this was, by the way, in the decade of the zeros, the power still went out once a day. There were construction projects that, even from a year prior, hadn't changed. It's just a different way of doing business. The caste system is very much employed, especially for affirmative action. Is that when governmental organizations create jobs, they actually provide employment requisitions based on the individual caste the people are coming from.
Well, India has the caste system, plus it's a hybrid of both the British parliamentary system and it's a democratic system of capitalism, and the Chinese system is a controlled communist system.
And it isn't lost to me that Samir, being of Indian descent, wouldn't necessarily want to invest today, but yet would have 4 or 5 years ago. It's an interesting data point.
Right, and I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of stuff that's happened over the last, you know, 3 to 4 years in terms of several major corruption scandals and the fact that India is not respecting foreign companies' IP. It makes it, India has almost shot itself in the foot by making it very, very difficult to do business out there. I mean, there's a lot of demand and the need for foreign direct investment, but you know, politicians are getting in the way of growth. And it's very, very sad because I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. But unless a few things are revamped pretty fast, I personally would not invest right now today in India.
But what's interesting is it still is considered to be, Jeffrey, the world's largest democracy. And unlike the planned one-party system of China, even though it is a country that is currently being governed by coalition, it still has a long way to go, etc.
Well, it's funny. I don't know anyone or any country in the world that isn't struggling right now. And, you know, I hear people, if I would take away the word India, I know people who I sit in a room and they'll just rant all over the United States and say they won't invest here anymore because the economy is a mess. Clearly, we're in a new century and we're clearly into this new century now. And there's a lot of work to be done all over the world. And we hope India, which is an important country, continues to do its work as well. If somebody wants to get hold of you, how would they do that?
They can look for me on LinkedIn. That's Samir, S-A-M-I-R, dot Jaluria, J-A-L-U-R-I-A. Or I can be reached at samir.jaluria@gmail.com.
Well, thank you for being on the show. We hope you join us again. This is Jeffrey Davis and Greg Stoller. We're not signing off totally, but we were going to take a break, and we'll be right back after these messages.